Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Recently, a disciple of one of my godbrothers revealed to me that he had become very disappointed in associating with one of my disciples, who he lived with for, so he was in the same center with him for several months, for his attitude of fault-finding and criticism. And when he, the devotee who I'm speaking to about this, had mentioned this to a disciple of yet another god brother, that other devotees said, that is their disease. In other words, saying that it is the disease of my disciples to be overly critical and fault-finding. That may or may not be true in some cases, or maybe it's perceived as being in all cases. But there is some perception like that. Even before this devotee had said this to me, some of my leading disciples had discussed with me about what they see as a problem among more junior of my disciples, speaking indiscriminately in a critical manner, pointing out faults here, there, and everywhere, immature devotees criticizing everything. So I'll address that issue in this talk, because it is an issue. It's easy to point out faults, and there are faults. There are things which should be seen. There should be discrimination between what should be done and what should not be done. There are compromises and deviations within Vaishnav society, and one should be aware of these so as not to be victimized by them. And to be aware of it, someone has to point it out. Who does that and how they do that is a matter of discussion or consideration. There is what seems to be a school of thought, which is, it's not really explicated, that one shouldn't find fault at all anywhere in anyone. Well, it's not a school of thought, it's the standard of Paramahamsa devotees, adosha darshi. They don't see any fault in anyone. But preachers have to see. There's a difference between what is proper and what is not proper. What to speak of preachers, even to be a human being, you have to see what is proper and what is not proper. That requires some discrimination, and that requires pointing it out and corrective measures as necessary. It can become a source of pride if one thinks, I am better, or we are better. It may be that one is following strictly, and others are not. But there's also what's called, in English, there's a phrase, the holier-than-thou attitude. When one thinks he does follow strictly, but he's proud because of that. And that's a major issue addressed in the New Testament, in the life of Christ. He was up against the Pharisees, who were the priests in Jewish society, who followed everything very strictly and thought themselves superior to others. And Jesus, he probably wasn't the only one, but he pointed out that they may, self-righteous, that is another term, self-righteous, thinking themselves very much better than others. Bring a chair. They can't sit comfortably. Bring a chair. And pride is the beginning of downfall. Even if you're proud about something which is proper to be proud, or you're doing things properly, but then you become proud of it, and that's the beginning of a downfall, whatever reason it may be. Pride is very dangerous. We know Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's famous verse, Trinadapi Sunichena Torori Vasahishnuna Amanina Manadena Kirtaniya Sadaharihi. One should be, or one should consider oneself lower than a straw in the street. One should be more tolerant than a tree. One should be ready to give all respect to others and not desire or expect respect for oneself. In such a state of mind, one can chant the holy name of the Lord constantly. That holy name should be chanted constantly. But that seems to militate against being a guru, guiding others, preaching to others. Still, it has to be done. So there's a very fine line between constructive, helpful criticism and fault-finding. Belittling others, laughing at others because you think they're stupid. Well, there may be some element of that also. Srila Prabhupada used to do that. But that was generally, he did it in an impersonal way, generally, in the sense that he would talk about the foolish scientists, for instance. But generally when he met a scientist, he might be very strong with people he met also, but we don't find him belittling them in that sense. I don't know if you can follow all these terms in the translation. If you had to, how would you say that? I'm just thinking, if I had to translate that into Hindi or Bengali, how would you say belittle someone? It means to... Niche dekana. Make them look small, or make them look lowly. So there is a problem among some of my disciples. And yeah, that should be addressed. But there are problems in Vaishnav society also, which should be spoken about. And it may be that if someone just points something out, then immediately, because there is this, what I consider to be overemphasis on not seeing any faults anywhere in any Vaishnavas at any time, any place, any circumstance. That seems to be a mood promoted in some quarters of our movement, if not major areas of our movement. Then anything goes, and standards are decreasing. It's not the basic standards that devotees used to follow when Srila Prabhupada was present, which is taken generally as the gold standard or the proper standard, are widely not followed, and not only many things are not followed, and not only are not followed, but one is ridiculed, belittled for following, or you may be even preached to not follow. For instance, it's a basic principle of Vaishnava behavior to only take food which is offered to Krishna, and that should be offerable to Krishna, which is not if it's cooked by non-devotees, for instance. And this is a rule which has largely not followed, is not preached, and it may even be preached among devotees that you should go to restaurants time to time with your family to have fun. have a family outing or whatever, and it may not be a Govinda's restaurant, or even in the Govinda's restaurant there may be non-devotees cooking. So how offerable is it to Krishna anyway? This should be, it's not such a small thing. These things should be considered, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Bishoyer anna kaile molin hoy mon, that one's mind becomes contaminated by eating food of materialistic people. Now, it's a very serious, you may think, well, it's just a small thing, but it's not a small thing. It's a very serious thing, because it contaminates the consciousness. And it goes against the whole principle of Krishna consciousness, which is Krishnarte Akhila Cheshta. Krishnarte Akhila Cheshta. One should do everything for Krishna's sake, for the pleasure of Krishna. But going to a kami restaurant because you think there's tasty food there, or it's a family outing or whatever, it's for one's own pleasure. So it's not good. And this should be pointed out. So you can, what I'm trying to point out here is that there are things to point out, but at the same time we have to be careful not to come to the state of putting everyone down and developing a pride that I'm superior or we're superior. Can be a very fine line. Another thing I just want to talk about is on my mind, because that same devotee mentioned this to me. The same devotee who mentioned he was very discouraged by associating with one of my disciples. He also mentioned with respect to another devotee about something that's becoming very common in Vaishnava society today, which is celebrating birthdays. Now, who am I to talk about? Whoops. Who am I to talk about that when just yesterday we had a big celebration with all pomp and grandeur, much more than I expect than others do when they, but that's just part of the parcel of being a guru in ISKCON. Actually, in other sampradayas or organizations, they don't have. Maybe they'll start now, because ISKCON is very influential in Hindu culture. So maybe they'll start that also. But birthday celebration is generally, apart from gurus, I'm talking about in the broader Vedic culture, for young children, in which we see the birthday of Krishna, the first birthday celebration. Brahmanas are invited, yajna is performed, and gifts are distributed to the brahmanas and ask them to give blessings to the child. You don't buy a cake from a kami bakery. That's another bogus thing in the whoops, you see, fault finding. It's my disease. And it gets, by genetics, spiritual genetics, it gets passed down to my disciples. But it's nonsense. What can I say? To buy a kami cake from a shop, no eggs, Prabhu, we hope. There's a whole syndrome about it, that especially temple presidents, and then if you don't go, then you get out of favor. You have to go and praise the temple president and this and that. And it's become a normal thing. Everyone's birthday is celebrated, but I would like to see, that would be very good, if that would be especially at our more established temples. I guess this is a fairly established temple, but in the farm communities we can do. And see, great acharyas, Narottam Das, we don't celebrate. We could at least have a day or an hour or two of singing the Rotam Bhajans. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, we could read from their translations now of his writings, read and discuss how we here in ISKCON are very much a product of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's mercy, inasmuch as one statement of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur became a major influence in the life of our own Srila Prabhupada. The statement of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in his Gita commentary, that one should accept the orders of his spiritual master as his life and soul, and whether I live or whether I die or whether the material world continues to exist or not, I don't care. Whether I go back to Godhead or not, I don't care, but I must follow the orders of my spiritual master. And Srila Prabhupada took that, as he explained to us, he took it very seriously. So if you want to celebrate more birthdays, we have so many acharyas, we can celebrate. It's a compromise with the Kami society. I suppose, well, what happens? You're living in society, following your career, which is your devotional service. It's another thing I'm leery about. And then your kids go to school where they learn Darwin's theory and how you have to have a good job and all this kind of thing. And the other kids at school, they have birthday parties. So then you have to have a birthday party for your kid also. And then Hare Krishna to you and all this kind of thing. Yeah, it's all part of, and then the parents think, well, I need a birthday party too. And it can become a way of shoring up one's political value also. Like I say, as a temple president. And then everyone has to come and glorify you. Failing which, they will be seen that they didn't come to glorify the temple president. It means he's in Maya. You can glorify him, but to organize a festival like that, like I say, it becomes let's put it this way at least. It wasn't something that Srila Prabhupada encouraged. It's not part of our tradition, and it can become just like for children, some kind of social thing, in which the emphasis is, you see, just like when Krishna was called, the emphasis is on how the child will be blessed by the brahmanas, not how, in Western culture, there's a cake cooked for them, and then, or they buy it from a shop, and then they're given presents, and the emphasis is on the sense gratification of the child. So it's a different thing. Once a complaint came to Srila Prabhupada about two of his disciples, Gaurasundara and Hanuman, who were preaching in South America. And one of the complaints was that devotees were singing in kirtan, Jaya Gaurasundara. And Prabhupada said, well, that's good to sing Jaya Gaurasundara. But Srila Prabhupada said, the praise of Vaishnavas is good, but they should wait. Then after the disappearance of the spiritual master, then everything, guru and praise, but there's an etiquette to be followed. Srila Prabhupada pointed that out. The spirit to glorify Vaishnavas is good. Actually, both of them fell down shortly after that. So that may, there were other things also. So Srila Prabhupada, he made that point. There's an etiquette in this regard, that one should not be anxious to accept so much praise in the presence of one's own guru. One shouldn't be anxious to accept praise at any phase, and one shouldn't think, I'm not in the presence of my guru. But there is a difference. Yesterday, Basu Ghosh Prabhu sent me a photo of a page from the Back to Prabhupada magazine, which is the magazine for criticizing in very strong terms anyone who doesn't believe in Ritvikism. So guess what? I don't believe in Ritvikism. And I'd given a talk in which I'd compared the Ritvikism in one sense, it's not seeing any difference between the prakat and aprakat, the two different phases. Srila Prabhupada, he opened one lecture it was on the disappearance day of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So Srila Prabhupada said there are two phases, prakat and aprakat. When the spiritual master is present and when he's not present. But they don't want to make any difference whatsoever. So there are statements from Srila Prabhupada. And from Bhaktivinoda Thakur, the Vaishnavas live in sound, but it's not exactly the same. The spiritual master is always present with you, but it's not exactly the same. There is a difference. We don't make a samadhi of the guru before he passes away, for instance, and we do after he passes away. There is a difference. You can prepare food to offer to him, but it's not, and you do that in the samadhi in particular, but it's not exactly the same that he'll directly as we see eat it, and he may. We don't see him going through, as we did with Srila Prabhupada, exhibiting the pastimes of sickness, for instance. Some days he wouldn't eat anything. If there are managerial problems in the Ritvik camp or it's philosophical differences, they can say, oh, let's go and ask Srila Prabhupada. Well, you can't do that nowadays in the way that we could do previously. There is a difference. So I pointed it out with a rather grotesque analogy of an Alfred Hitchcock film. Have you heard of Alfred Hitchcock, Anand? You haven't heard of him. Just see. He was such a famous person when I was a kid. He was a British, I'll say he was British, but actually in America he made fame for making horror movies. So one of the movies was that you'll find throughout the whole film that the man is talking to his mother, but the mother doesn't reply, and you don't see the face of the mother, you just see from behind. And then at the end of the film, you see the front of the mother, and it's a skeleton. She's dead. So he didn't accept the fact that she had passed away. So it's a grotesque example, and I'll probably get quoted again in there. Back to Prabhupada, as they call it, Back to Prabhupada magazine. But I'm just making the point that he didn't recognize the fact that there is a difference between the direct presence of his mother and the non-direct presence of his mother. She passed away from the body. So I pointed out that the Ritvikvadis, they think that there's absolutely no difference whatsoever. Although when they give their so-called initiation, it's not Prabhupada who gives the beads, it's Madhu Pandit, I've seen in the video. And the people bow down to him. He doesn't bow down to them when he's giving the beads. And they're all supposed to be God brothers and everything. And so there is a difference. And they don't want to accept that. So, one should point out there are errors, there are mistakes. It needs to be pointed out. Failure to do so is blamable. especially in the case of serious infractions of proper behavior. And a great example of that is the Asat Sabha, in which the gambling match, in which Draupadi was insulted, and even she petitioned Bhishma, "What do you say?" And he didn't say, "This is wrong." She said, "Is this dharma?" And he said, he waffled, that, "Well, dharma is very difficult, it's very subtle and very difficult to understand." And he ended up on the wrong side. Bhima, he was restrained by dharma. Otherwise, he would have killed them all right on the spot. But his anger, it didn't, usually anger, it goes down, but with Bhima, it just increased at every moment until he got the chance to kill them all, as he promised to do. Vidura spoke and Vikarna spoke. They spoke out, no one else spoke out. And their failure to do so led to the carnage. That was also wanted by Krishna, because Duryodhana was killable. I don't know if there's any word in English. Yeah, there probably is. You could make it up. He should be killed. He should have been killed on the spot. But Krishna wanted to wait. Let the pus build up, and when it's fully right, then you incise it. It can be very. Who would dare to speak out when Bhishma himself doesn't speak out in the presence of the king, who's very powerful? Well, then Dhritarashtra is there. And, well, that was the whole question, wasn't it? Well, Duryodhana, who's going to speak out against Duryodhana? Yeah. Very dangerous to do so. And you may think, well, if Bhishma didn't speak out, you may think it's wrong for me to do so. If he doesn't do so, it's wrong for me to do so. But Vikarna did. But still, he joined the wrong side. out of brotherly duty. This is exactly what to do, which side you should be on. But he's remembered as a good guy in the fight. And Bhima had vowed to kill all the sons of Dhritarashtra. So he killed Vikarna also. But after killing him, he circumambulated him to give respect. So things should be pointed out, but how to do so in such a way that the point gets across? Well, it'll get across to some. Some appreciate constructive criticism, and some are benefited by it, and some don't appreciate it at all. And some see it as a disease. It can be a disease if more junior disciples, or they just get just all the time inappropriately to. What's appropriate and what's not appropriate, that is a question. But just to get on a trip, to always be talking about this and so many things. It can be very difficult to get the point across, even if it's a valid point. After the fall down of Harikesh Maharaj in the late 1990s, I believe it was, some godbrothers of his told disciples of his, that yes, we knew there was a problem for so many years. He was having problems. And they said, well, why didn't you tell us? Why didn't you tell? That's another consideration. Do you go and tell the disciples, your guru is having this problem and that problem? I tried at one point, after considering this, I tried pointing out some things to one of the gurus in our movement. Some things in his behavior which appeared to be irregular. He wasn't interested in listening. And then I pointed out publicly, I went through various channels, but it caused a big ruckus, and no one was interested to hear. So I made a mistake in that sense, because what was the point of pointing out if no one's interested to hear? But still, if things are pointed out, there can be rectification, just like a few years ago. It was becoming a fashion in the Western world, Christendom, they used to call it, the countries where Christianity was prominent, to dress Krishna on Christmas Day in a Santa outfit and have reindeers in the background and snow, supposed to be snow falling in the background. And it was pointed out that there's something wrong here. And quickly, it was within about 3 years, which is pretty quick by ISKCON standards, because it only happens once a year after all. And there came a diktat from the ISKCON deity worship ministry, stop this. And as far as I know, it stopped, although maybe in their own homes, devotees, they can do whatever they damn well like, right? Because it's just a deity, right? And you can do whatever you like with a deity, because just a deity. And especially if a more senior devotee than myself points out things, it may be likely to be taken more seriously, but I have been painted, rightly or wrongly, in some quarters as a fault finder. So that just by invoking that word, that just negates everything I point out. It's a good device to just do what you like and say, well, anyone who says there's something wrong is a fault finder. It becomes problematic how to do that. And then you say go through the ISKCON system, but frankly, the ISKCON system is set up in such a way that it protects the status quo, whatever it may be, for better or worse. And in many cases, there are problems, as is widely perceived. The syndrome of neophyte devotees being very critical was brought to Srila Prabhupada's attention, and we'll find this in The Science of Self-Realization. There's a letter from one woman in California who wrote to Srila Prabhupada. Her name was Lynn Ludwig, it's written. I guess originally that would have been pronounced Ludwig, but in English it becomes Ludwig. And she wrote to Srila Prabhupada in a respectful way. But she said that several times she had met disciples of Srila Prabhupada, because you would often meet devotees that go out and distribute Back to Godhead magazines and this and that. So in California, especially, our movement was very active in Los Angeles, San Francisco, and other places. She said she'd several times met his disciples, and they were very negative about the world and the people within the world. And she said, this isn't the way it should be. They should be loving. They should be more loving and not so critical. So Srila Prabhupada, after some time, he opened the letter by apologizing for the delay in replying because he'd been busy in traveling. And then he at length discussed how the material world is misery. He apologized that, I apologize that my dear disciples, my beloved disciples, they have acted in a manner which has disturbed you. But then Srila Prabhupada went on to explain that actually the material world is miserable. And anyone who tries to come out of that and surrender to Krishna is a great soul. But Srila Prabhupada also acknowledged in that letter that it may be that neophyte devotees, they, feeling the pressure from Maya, they overcompensate. I'm paraphrasing here. They overly compensate, or they overly react, and they take a very strong view of everything and anyone that's not Krishna conscious. And of course, Srila Prabhupada and Shastra and the Acharyas are like that also. But it may be that neophyte devotees, they go too far in this. And that was marked in our movement in an earlier phase when brahmacharis and sannyasis, maybe to protect themselves from the from their own lust, their own lusty desires, became very negative toward and critical of women and even the women devotees, and mistreated them. So it may be that they had a transcendental motive, but it wasn't expressed in a very proper way. But that may be there also, that devotees, they overly react. Maybe they're thinking, well, I'd like a birthday cake too. Maybe they're thinking like that. And they overly react, yeah, it's bogus to have a birthday cake. And it's a whole question. How much do we compromise with the Western culture? That the birthday parties is middle class India now, it's city life in India, it's part of the culture. Birthday parties for children, which wasn't there before. How much do we go along with that? With all of that, in Islam in the West, the traditional Muslims are trying to stop them. What are these birthday parties? They have the same problem. It's not part of our Islamic tradition. How much do we admit of Western culture? Or modern culture, how far do we go? It may be different in different cases. We're trying in our farm communities to, as far as possible, practice according to the traditional culture without anything modern, as far as possible. Culturally, it's fairly easy. And in other ways, it may not. Being completely divorced from money is not easy. Even from plastic, it's not easy, somehow or other. Well, yeah, it's easier to have a plastic pipe than to carry or make channels for water and then It can be done. But plastic suddenly makes things easier. Murari Gupta, last time I was at his place, he said that, well, machines, I know they're not good, but I'm glad I've got a power saw for cutting trees, because I can do, in 1 or 2 days, I can cut enough wood to last us all the winter. If I have to do it by just with a regular axe, it would take me weeks and I'd be completely exhausted. Practically throughout the summer, you have to go on cutting if you do it with a hand axe, but with a power saw, he just goes and cuts a few trees. He's living in the forest and heats the house, which is very much needed in the winter. Although we saw, did you see that photo they sent? January, there's no snow in Lika. Global warming at work. So yeah, there's always the temptation that, why are you bothering all this? Even actually to have a hand pump like this, that's also some kind of compromise. But why are you bothering with that? Just, you know, get a put in an electric motor and stick it in and have a few pipes and a tap and it's much easier. Well, there's a whole understanding behind that, because when you have that, you have to have money, and then once you start having it, anyway, that's not for discussing now. So on the farm communities, yes, we can try to institute the pristine culture. It's not for everyone. Those who come from city life, it may be very difficult for them to adjust. In the cities, what do? Your kids, they don't understand why you're not watching TV when all their friends watch TV. And then they'll run off to the next door apartment to watch TV. And the next door apartment, they're also eating meat. And what do? I know Jayatirtha Charan. Do you remember him? Jayatirtha Charan, years ago, he used to be in India. He said that he would, his kids are grown up now, but he used to choose family comedies, you can say, which there's nothing evil in them, but it's just some movie which is suitable for families, and he would sit and watch it with his kids. That was his way of having them watch TV. And he probably had a good laugh too, because comic comedy can be funny, right? Prabhupada used to like Charlie Chaplin. It's also funny. But it's a whole gray area. But if we're not cautious, the gray turns to black. It's easy to just adjust this, adjust that, and adjust this, and adjust that, and you find that, yeah, instead of saying we shouldn't eat kami food, we have devotees preaching you should eat kami food. That means it's not gray, it's become black. So I'm trying to preach the other way. Don't, and then fanatic, called fanatic. But we have to be cautious in even discussing these things, because if we overly or state our case in a way that others don't accept, it'll be misunderstood. Just like Srila Prabhupada pointed out to Lynn Ludwig, she'd misunderstood. Or the devotees themselves, they didn't get the point across. Of course, it is again, I'm going backwards and forwards. It is difficult to get the point across. How do you get the point across? That's our preaching, isn't it? How do you get the point across to the populace in general that material life is a disaster? Most people don't get that. You may think, well, nowadays people are thinking, yeah, the governments, at least in the West, people are thinking, the governments, they're all cheating us, and the pharmaceutical industry is cheating us, and the corporations are cheating us. But they're not fried with material life. They're just fried with the way it's going on at present. They just want to adjust it and have green this and natural that and adjust and make some society so they can all live happily in this world. They didn't give up the idea of enjoying in this material world. They just think that it's the present situation is not suitable for that. And they want to change that. And that's the whole story of material life. Everyone always thinks that the present situation isn't suitable for it, and they always want to change it. So to get the point, the first point to get across this material world is miserable, we don't belong here, we're eternal spirit souls, we have to surrender to Krishna. It's not easy to get it across. Preaching means we're going to be misunderstood. So it's easier to preach in a manner that we don't say the things that people need to hear, and we speak instead of things that people like to hear, like love and compassion and peace and love, all this kind of thing, without making it clear that these things can only properly exist in a state of surrender to Krishna. And that everything in the name of love and compassion and kindness and so on, without relation to Krishna, is only a perverse reflection. Anyway, I discussed these points in that book on speaking strongly in Srila Prabhupada's service. How do you speak strongly without being considered egoistic? What's better? Srila Prabhupada, in that letter to Lynn Ludwig, if you read between the lines, you can see that Srila Prabhupada is saying it's better to be what she appeared to be fanatical. It's better to be on that platform than not. It's better to be on the platform of being extreme and maybe misunderstood and maybe not sensitive, to use that common word, in dealing with others. It's better to be on that platform and striving for Krishna consciousness than to be nice and peaceful and kind and compassionate and not be on that platform. The fact that someone's in Krishna consciousness is itself it's glorious. So we have to be careful. We have to be careful against thieves, burglars. In the Nectar of Devotion, Srila Prabhupada uses that word, burglars. He's quoting Rupa Goswami, saying that one should not let the burglars, or those who are promoting material enjoyment and impersonal liberation, one shouldn't let one's bhakti be stolen away by these burglars. They came to steal our bhakti. So in the same way, if someone's coming and saying, no, it's good, you should eat some kami food. Don't be too strict, you'll become proud. Ever heard that, Gopala Acharya? When you're in Ireland, how many times a day on average? Yeah, there is a danger of becoming proud. But if you do eat kami food, there's not just a danger, but the fact is that one's mind will become contaminated. So the thing is to do the right thing and not become proud rather than do the wrong thing. Wrong is always wrong. If you do the right thing in the wrong way, that's also wrong. But if you do the right thing, even if the attitude is not fully proper, that can be rectified, and that's why we have rules and regulations. One may be proud by following the rules and regulations, but they protect us. And as we go on hearing and chanting about Krishna under guidance from others, then we can cross over the neophyte stage. Anyway, we all have faults. That Srila Prabhupada also pointed out. famously when two factions among his disciples were at odds with each other. The brahmacharis and sannyasis, or many of them in America, were campaigning that all the grihasthas should be sent out of the temples. Apparently, I've heard it several times, although I've not seen it in any written record. Apparently, there was a suggestion at some point that all the unmarried women should be sent to Australia from America. Get them out. Get them away. Srila Prabhupada didn't agree with that. The sannyasis and brahmacharis were saying, see, the grihasthas, they don't follow strictly. And Srila Prabhupada said, you don't follow strictly, and I don't follow strictly. No one in this age can follow all the rules and regulations. Therefore, Haran Nama, Haran Nama, Haran Nama, Eva Kevalam. Therefore, the concession is given for this age, chanting Hare Krishna. Now, that doesn't mean that Srila Prabhupada said that we shouldn't follow any rules and regulations, but he was just making the point that to follow strictly, as in previous ages, it's practically not possible. And even if you do follow strictly all the rules and regulations, unless we develop love of Krishna by chanting Hare Krishna, then what's the point? So the rules and regulations are not the point in and of themselves, but they should be adopted for the sake of Krishna. Krishnate akhila cheshta. One should do everything for the pleasure of Krishna. And the rules and regulations are given to help us advance in Krishna consciousness. So we all have faults. That doesn't mean that deviation shouldn't be pointed out. That doesn't mean that we can just do anything we like and just say, well, you also have faults, so don't point out my faults. There should be an attitude in our society that we're all here to advance in Krishna consciousness, which means that we have to follow sadhu marganugamanam. We have to follow the path given by the previous acharyas. Sadhu, guru, shastra, vakya, titete koriya aika, arna kori homane asha. We sing every day Guru Mukha Padma Vakya, but there's another version in another section of the songs of Narottam Das, in which it's also in Prema Bhakti Chandrika, that the instructions given by the sadhus, the gurus, and the shastra, we should make it one with our heart and not desire anything else. Anyway, we all have faults. Let's try to push on this mission as Srila Prabhupada did with tremendous, tremendous effort, enthusiasm, determination, and patience. Tremendous enthusiasm, tremendous determination, tremendous patience. Srila Prabhupada pushed on Krishna consciousness. He gave leadership roles to capable and enthusiastic disciples who were often at each other's throats, almost literally in some cases. Physical fights were not unknown between Srila Prabhupada's leaders. Not that they happened every day, but they were not unknown. And Srila Prabhupada went on. He pushed on. There was a momentum. He wanted to keep it going. So let us cooperate to push on the mission. But also consider that for all our hard work that we're doing in distributing books, building temples, and preaching, and this and that, it can be undone. It can be undone by our own pride or our own fault-finding spirit or our own rigidness in not wanting to adjust to others or by not following the regulated principles, even this one thing, that it's okay to eat kami food, that can spoil the whole movement. Because if everyone's doing it, then it means the mind is contaminated, and the motive of doing everything for Krishna's pleasure is lost. It's very dangerous. We don't take it seriously. Anyway, there are a few thoughts. I thought I should discuss that, as the point was brought to me by a devotee who's got, in, you could say, mujhse kuch lena dena nahi hai. He doesn't have any, doesn't have anything to gain or lose from me. But he said it to me. He told me. I wanted to know, because he told me he'd had some bad experience. So I tell you, please tell me so I can address it. So now I'm addressing it. And even before that, some of my own leading disciples had pointed that out, that it does become problematic when neophyte devotees especially, they react with other members of ISKCON in such a way as it's misunderstood. How can it be properly understood? How can it be properly understood? We should say to devotees, look, we have to follow what Srila Prabhupada gave us, isn't it? If you just point out, this is wrong, that is wrong, we should point out, this is what Srila Prabhupada gave us, this is what we should follow. And hopefully everyone in ISKCON should agree on that principle. But what we do often run into is that devotees say, well, my guru said it's okay, my guru does that. And then we have to establish the principle that gurus have to follow Srila Prabhupada. On that basis, they're gurus. But it becomes very hard for people to accept that, well, Prabhupada said this, but my guru said something else, and he's empowered by Prabhupada, and he's adjusting according to time, place, and circumstance. What is a suitable adjustment? I mean, the whole movement's on the verge of a split on that question in regard to female Diksha gurus. But that understanding should be there. We should follow what Srila Prabhupada said. But also, we have to see that Srila Prabhupada, it becomes a bigger question when we say that Srila Prabhupada himself is a representative of the whole Sampradaya. So some of the things he may have done in the early days for preaching in the West are not necessarily meant to be the template for all of the future. That should also be considered. Some may not want to consider that. They may say, well, in the first days of ISKCON, no one shaved their head and all the men and women danced next to each other, so we should continue with that forever. Only later they brought all these rules. Who brought the rules? Srila Prabhupada brought the rules. Anyway, definitely there will be different interpretations, different understandings, different practices, all in the name of Srila Prabhupada. So, look where you're going. Ultimately, everyone has to make their own decision. Which path do you want to go on? Which path do you see as going back to Godhead? And not just back to Godhead, we should do something to promote Srila Prabhupada's mission also. Hare Krishna, all glories to His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada, all glories to all the devotees who are faithfully serving His mission. Hare Krishna. Vancha kalpa tarubhyascha kripa sindhubhya evacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha dante nithaya churnakam padaya nipatya kritva chakha kushatam etad aham bravimi he sadhava sakala eva vihaya durat gauranga chandra charne kurutanuragaha. parivadatu jano yata tata va nanu mukharo navayam vicharayamaha hari rasamadi ramadati matta bhuvi vilotama nartama nirvisha. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. There may be so many questions. From this kind of talk, there could be so many questions. Often when someone sends me a question, I used to send it to you, and you'd find a talk.
Some years ago, a similar complaint or concern had come. You gave an analogy that when the children are raised in atmosphere of war, they tend to be more aggressive because of that atmosphere.
And if children are raised in an atmosphere of
war, yeah. So
they tend to be more aggressive.
Initially, they do not know how to wield this sword, but just to protect themselves or to aggression, to save themselves from the aggression.
Yeah.
But then gradually, then when they are raised up further, they know the war tactics and maybe better, in a better way, they know how to wield the sword. So similarly, you drew that analogy to explain that some of the disciple or devotees, neophytes, initially they may not know how to tackle the situation when there is an aggression.
I gave the example, but I can't remember it. What is it? Children are raised in an atmosphere, in a war situation.
Yes.
So they grow up learning how to use a sword?
No. Because of the situation of aggression all the time from the opposite direction, they initially also are raised with that attitude of aggression. And they may not know how to wield the sword.
They're raised in an atmosphere of aggression. They don't know how to use a sword, but they see others using a sword, and they may start to use a sword in an incompetent way, and in this way unnecessarily harm others and maybe harm themselves also. Is that the analogy?
Yes, you had given that analogy when in the past.
I see. I didn't remember it, but they have to get trained how to use it and in which circumstances to use it. It requires a lot of training. Okay, well, thank you for reminding me of that. I don't remember it at all. Hare Krishna.